Tell me what you like, yeah, tell me what you don't. I could be a Buzz Light, yeah, fly across the globe. I don't ever wanna fight, yeah, you already know. I'ma make you shine bright like you're laying in the snow, bar. Girlfriend, girlfriend, you could be my girlfriend. You could be my girlfriend into the upper world, yes. Make you dance, do a spin and a twirl. And boys going crazy on this hook like a whirlwind, swaggy.
I'd like to be everything you want. Hey, girl. Let me talk to you.
If I was your boyfriend, never let you go. Keep you on my arm, girl. You'd never be alone. I could be a gentleman, anything you want. If I was your boyfriend, never let you go. Never let you go.
So give me a chance, 'cause you're all I need, girl. Spend a week with your boy, I'll be calling you my girlfriend. If I was your man,
if I was your man,
I'd never be a girl.
Jet Set. We are live on Hawk Radio, the official station of Hillsborough Community College, live from Ybor City. And today is a very special show because our co-host, Camilo, is finally joining us. And we have a very special guest with us. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Nice to meet you. This is the assistant professor. What exactly? I feel like you should introduce yourself.
Yeah, my name is Valerie Palazzolo. I'm an assistant professor of art history and humanities here at Hillsborough Community College in Ybor.
That's awesome. And today we're going to be talking a little bit about Italy, or at least the region. We're going to be talking about a lot of art history. I mean, Italy, I feel like, is the go-to choice for that sort of thing. At least when you're looking at, like, the most impactful sort of history.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Yeah. So how are you guys doing this morning?
I'm great because I am also Italian. So I have ancestry, at least. Never actually been there, but
I got a Belafonte on my dad's side, so that's pretty close.
You are Irish.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. I got the pale pink skin. Well,
his name is Rapone, so I can confirm that. And my mother's maiden name is Cannata, which is super young.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyways, I'm doing well. How are you doing today, Camilo?
I just arrived.
No, he was here 20 minutes early. He had all his notes, and he was rare and ready to go.
I was just in the bathroom.
Yeah. He had the nerves, you know? All right.
But we're here now.
So, Camilo, you've been to Italy, haven't you?
No, I haven't.
Oh, that's the one.
I haven't been there, but I have a very, like, all my schedule tip, like, how would it be when I go there? And my family, we have all planned when we go there. Because we really want it. It's like a dream.
Yeah.
And I'm learning Italian, so that's also,
oh, you
like,
are? Wow.
Yeah, in Duolingo. How many languages do you know?
You can count partially now.
16.
No, let's say I know two languages. I know partially other languages. Let's say four. That's a lot. Yeah, thank you. I think it's a compliment.
All right. So. Let's go. Want to go into our first music break?
Yeah. Who? Does anyone have a particular order?
No.
All right, so we're gonna go. I guess we'll go into mine since my segment is first. I hope you guys enjoy. This is "Too Drunk to Drive" by Hey Nothing.
It's a different night in the same old spot. It's like we forget that we hate this block, but there's a party, and everyone, including you, will be there. You hate the taste of beer, so you're taking shots. Time to drinks behind you, and you haven't stopped, and you're so pretty. I think I might have said that out loud. trying to drive. It's a brand new year in the same old crowd. Guess it's what you get when you stick around and you're so sick of acting like you really want to be here. You hate the sight of mullet, so you close your eyes. The spinning's just beginning and it's on the rise. And you're nauseous, I think you better call it a night.
Welcome back. You're listening to Jet Set on Hawk Radio, the official radio of Hillsborough Community College, live from Ybor City. And we are back, and we are here with Valerie Palazzolo, and we are talking about Italy.
Yes, we are.
She is a professor of art history at HCC. Do you want to tell us about your career here and how you got into art history?
Right. So I am your mother's worst nightmare. And that I started as a medical student, biology student, like the whole path and everything, and took art history as an elective in my first year of undergrad and instantly fell in love with it and was just like, yeah, sciences aren't for me. Sorry, sciences. And yeah, so that's just kind of what I do. I have been here for 11 years.
Wow.
I know. And I did a lot of work at USF before that. And so I taught in Paris for a year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, yeah. Looking at art.
How'd you end up at HCC?
Happenstance. I just submitted an application and it turned out fine.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's one way to get a
yeah.
job.
Yeah. When you need a job. That's mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we're going to be talking about art history. So what kind of piqued your interest in art history specifically?
Yeah, so I took 9 million years ago when I was an undergrad, right, at USF, the state of Florida let you take art history, mm-hmm. like the survey classes, Art History 1, Art History 2, for your general history gen eds. And so I had come in with the idea that history was boring. Sorry. I was one of those where I was like, oh, history. I mean, it wasn't boring, but I just thought,
it can be very dry. I know so much about monks.
It's just
exactly.
It's just so much of just like sitting and being told these things and these dates and these. And I was like, okay, well, I didn't know what art history was. And I was like, well, surely it's going to be illustrated history, because then, you know, if you show me a pretty picture, maybe I'll keep my attention.
No, when I started, I Because I love art history. Yeah. I think it's a perfect way to view history as a whole, you know, because it's human creation. But I remember going into it, taking class in high school, thinking it was going to be really, really fun. Yeah. And it's just a lot of talking.
It's a history class.
It's a history class, yeah. But I feel like a lot of people who do like history kind of start out with that, oh, man, this is going to be just the worst. And then it really does get better.
No, it does. It gets, and that's the thing I always have to, you know, I always start every semester and remind students that, you know, art history is a history, but there's two ways of thinking about that. Either we are the history of art, so like the progression of this is the art that's being made in this time in this place, but we're also history, and this is why they're making this art in this time in this place.
So yeah,
exactly. What fascinates me the most about art history is the why they're making this and the influences on it.
Yeah, and there's so many, you know, different methods that we can approach an artwork of, you know, why are they making it in this particular style? Why are they making it within this political context? Why are they making it with this particular material, right? Economics,
and that's
aspects.
What, because every week on the show I do like movies, and that's always the approach I take to them, because I love looking at why even the films you never expect, they always are influenced by like the politics and even subconsciously sometimes.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there's always this sort of interlay, and that's where the sort of general humanities kind of comes in as far as our gen ed curriculum is, because we look a little more generally at how all of the different art forms are folding together. So visual art, music, theater, dance, because everyone's sort of responding to the same thing. The way we live today where everyone is like, you know, dance is over here, theater is way across campus, art is in that weird little tiny hovel building in the back corner by the interstate. And it's, you know, that's very new. So
I think that's a really great way to put it, actually, about the way it intertwines with what's happening in history. I mean, we talked about when we did our Germany show, we talked a lot about Dracula.
Nosferatu.
Count Orlok.
Dracula, I think, is Romania, but
Transylvania, Romanian, and around there.
Nosferatu. But we talked a lot about that and how that was inspired by a lot of happenings at the time. There was a very big kind of public hysteria regarding it, and I just that is so cool because it's, you know, like you said, a lot of people go into art history thinking it's the history of art, but really it's history and how humans respond to it via art.
It's just the old adage, life reflects art.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Art over and over and over again.
So let's talk a little bit about Italian art history. I mean, everybody knows like Leonardo da Vinci, Michelangelo.
The Ninja Turtles.
The Ninja Turtles. Sandro Botticelli. But let's go a little bit back earlier, before that. What can you tell us about the Roman Empire?
A little bit earlier.
Just a thousand years earlier,
but no big deal. So the Roman Empire, of course, is also not technically the start of art in Italy.
Oh, no, not at all.
But yeah, we do want to sort of always acknowledge that the Roman Empire is a significant moment, because this is when we do have, we talk a lot about sort of city-states and whatnot. We're talking about ancient Greece and the sort of independent polities, but Italy was the same. Until the Roman sort of city-state actually kind of invaded all of the Italian peninsula. And something that I always like to remind people is that geographically in size, the modern country of Italy is roughly the size of the state of Florida. So to just kind of give you a reminder.
That's what actually like tricked me up about Europe.
I also always have the trick of, if you know Florida geography, then you know Italian geography. So I'm sorry to actual Italy, but Rome, you're Tampa. Absolutely. It totally works out because Naples is still Naples. Mm-hmm. Venice is Jacksonville. They certainly don't want to hear that.
Well, we have a Naples and a Venice.
Exactly.
Here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we've got, you know, little Pinellas County, Hillsborough County invades all of the state of Florida and then decides, guess what? You're all Tamponians?
Tamponians? I said Tamponians, but it just... Tamponians?
So
technically, Tallahassee will be Milan.
Yes, yes.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it totally makes sense. No, some of them totally work out, and, you know, Rome being Tampa does actually work out. They don't want to hear it, but... And then, no, absolutely. So you've got this idea where all of a sudden everyone is Roman, and so now everyone becomes Roman citizen. And so one of the biggest things that I think we get a lot from the distinction between Rome and, of course, the idea of the Greek arts and Greek culture even, is that Rome is really not a copy of Greece. Like, not even a little bit.
No.
They do adopt some of the Greek gods and Greek mm-hmm. things and Greek names and Greek myths because their religion is so very different.
I didn't know people were saying that they were
a
copy.
Absolutely, actively. That is the very first thing I ask students every semester is, what do you know about ancient Rome? And it's, they just copied the Greeks.
No.
I've been doing this for a long time, and that's what I hear on constant repeat. So, yeah, so the Roman world is very decorative.
Oh, for sure.
And so they do a lot of decoration, a lot of sort of art installation, and they really popularize the idea of public art, mm-hmm. I think, which is really significant. So highly ornate ornamental spaces, big public squares. Now, of course, they're doing it for political purposes to keep the people, you know, mm-hmm. pacified.
Yeah.
But no, absolutely. Lots of sort of ornamentation, mm-hmm. lots of really sort of decorative things. And that's always a really sort of significant thing, is that even, you know, little squigglies and little details, those always have some political meaning.
Oh, yeah. I remember I took Roman archaeology at USF. And that was focused on buildings. But mm-hmm. even still, like, every little bit of that building was somehow symbolic for what that emperor did in his lifetime or that senator or something.
Wow. Yeah. No, even the – and so we see that a lot because, of course, the Renaissance literally is the rebirth of the Roman world, and it's distinctive to Italy. And so that's a going back, and so we'll start seeing a lot more of that, like the little acanthus leaves or the little, like, this style pilaster versus the Greek style, this column. And, yeah, it becomes very – it does, as we move into the 19th and 20th century, become a little more nationalist. But early on, it's, you know, mm-hmm. artistic, but –
Well, one of the questions I had was, do you think Roman art had any part in politics? But I already know the answer to that is for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, it's art can be used, right, for politics, but it can also be used for...
I think it's a good way of documenting that sort of history.
No, there's a lot of... there's a lot of different ways of saying it. And so there's, you know, and it's not the first one to do it. You know, there's a long tradition pre-Roman... But, yeah, using even materials from, like, far-off lands that are now part of the Roman Empire and being like, hey, look at this fancy new marble that you didn't see yesterday.
Almost a sign of status.
Yeah, absolutely.
A little bit. Yeah. So let's jump ahead to the Renaissance, because you did mention that. A lot of people say it's, like, one of the most influential, because, I mean, you have the most famous and moving paintings and statuettes, and would you agree that it's one of the most influential art movements out there?
Okay, so the thing about the Renaissance is very tricky, because in its own time, it is middle class fancy. In its own time, painting is like the equivalent of a mass produced poster that I bought at IKEA. But it does absolutely build that status. And part of it is because the growing middle class buying power. So now all of a sudden you have more people, that sort of, you know, economic shift towards sort of proto-capitalism, where people are buying things and demonstrating wealth in ways that they hadn't before. Mm-hmm. Because you do want to remember, in the early part of the Renaissance, it's still very much a feudal society.
Yeah.
So land ownership surpasses all other things. And so, you know, if you're not making stuff with straight up gold, then everything else is peasantry.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where Donatello, I always kind of make the joke, because he should have never been a Ninja Turtle. It really should have been Titian, because he was a century earlier, and I have a whole argument for that. But, absolutely. The Renaissance revives that Italian history or Roman tradition, brings back the classical way of looking at things, the way of looking at and picturing art in a way that appears as it does in nature. We don't like saying realistic in art. We like saying naturalistic.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, absolutely, really getting that sort of shift. And then, like I said, it, in its own time, it's actually not as significant as we like to think it is. But then towards the end of the Renaissance, the 16th century, moving into the 17th century, it does become the standard because of the establishment of the art academies. And the first one is in Florence. And so once we have the first establishment of the art academy, you know, that's it. That's still how we teach art.
And I think that, like, you bringing up, like, the natural arts, I think that does play a really big role in today's sort of teaching of art, is that it's almost perpetuated that this is what we have to strive for, because it was perpetuated that way hundreds, like, over the past 100, 200, 300 years or so. Not just in America, but you go further back in Europe, you're kind of told that this is, you know, this is higher class, you know, doing that sort of stylized is almost lesser than.
Right. And it does, you know, the rule is always, you know, because you'll have students who are like, why do I have to learn to draw hyper naturalistic, hyper realistic mm-hmm. when I want to make illustrations or animations or this, that, or whatever else? And you can't break the rules until you know what the rules are.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you have to learn the foundation. You have to learn the technique, because then no one can just say, oh, my kid could do that. Right. Because you're like, but could your kid do this? And that's kind of, you know, because the Romans do see that. We do see abstraction even in the Roman world towards the end of the empire. And so that's what the Renaissance does, is the same thing. And then we got the Renaissance and then Mannerism in Italy specifically.
I have a question, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go for it.
What made Italy so, like, special in this card? Why did the Renaissance start here and not anywhere else, you know?
Because Rome was there.
Okay, that was specifically why. That's
it. Because the Renaissance is actually, so there's this, you know, great, we, from a historical perspective, we don't call it the Renaissance anymore. We call it the early modern period, because otherwise, when did it start? When did it end?
I was thinking of asking that, because it's always a bit of where the Renaissance
actually how do we define
started.
It? And so we tend to, you know, just sort of like, now outdated, but still just convenient. Date brackets are about the 14th century through the 16th century. And so, you know, there's this moment where we do see, and our argument for that is actually a specific book written in the late 16th century under the in Florence, a guy named Vasari totally defined everything we know. And it was the greatest PR move that ever happened for this period in Italian art. And he basically says, like, this is the moment. This is the artist that started rejecting the medieval abstract form and moving back towards the Roman classicism.
I should know his name. So, I took that class.
It's fine. No, that's a... Like, I mean,
Petrarch?
Yeah.
Petrarch?
Petrarch is a poet.
Oh, darn.
No, that's... I mean, you're not being tested. It's fine.
Well, I should be. I did take these classes.
Yeah, so we go... We have this moment, and so Cimabue is actually the one that he marks as the last medieval artist, and then Giotto is our first Renaissance artist in this great canon story of art history. And so we see this transition towards returning back to the Roman style. But they do still actually actively believe that the Romans didn't make paintings, because they didn't survive, right, until the rediscovery of Pompeii. And that is when we get, again, another sort of, like, boost of, you know, Roman style in the 18th century.
Well, there was also a lot of backlash, because they found that these marble statues or these statuettes were originally painted, weren't they?
Yeah. Garishly so.
Yeah. And
everyone looked like Ronald McDonald.
I know that. I think that's why it got so much backlash. Is they saw these pristine white marble statues, and then they find out they were just, like, painted with these very... I mean, now it would be considered probably very garish colors, but I mean, it is an important part of art history to sort of keep that preserved.
Yeah,
that knowledge.
No, absolutely. So, yeah, everything was painted, but because marble, the stone itself is so dense, it doesn't have a lot of pores, so it doesn't collect and hold the pigment. It doesn't hold the paint. So when they were buried and they were lost, it just sort of, like, the paint eroded. So that, yeah, they didn't know that. But, no, one of the biggest ones, too, is that because those wealthiest families are really collecting in the Renaissance period, right? These are antiquities as they're being rediscovered. And I always make it's a joke, but it's not really a joke, because they would send representatives to be at the site when they're digging them up to, like, make a bid before it even comes out of the ground. And Michelangelo was present for this really important rediscovery of this sculpture called the Laocoon. And that is an important moment in Michelangelo's career, because we see his paintings go from already some muscles have muscles to holy crap, they have like muscles on muscles on muscles. Like, you know, what is happening here? And so, yeah.
It's interesting how you can track all the influences in his mm-hmm. life.
Well, I wanted to ask, how do you think the teaching of art history, as well as, I know this is a very big ask, the entire history of what we've just talked about, how do you think that impacts modern Italy today?
So modern Italy is complicated because they were not unified until, I'm sure you guys found this mm-hmm. when doing your reading. Yeah. 1860, I think, plus. Is when it's officially, like, mm-hmm. official. I know it starts early on.
Yeah.
Italy also is still a kingdom until World War I. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that is, you know, there's a king. And that's really significant because Italy today doesn't have, even still, doesn't really have that unified feel to it. Like, you know, again, people are still very, define themselves very regionally.
Northern Italy and Southern Italy are just
completely different. Because they have completely different traditions, completely different backgrounds. And so,
people are saying that between Italy, that they say that how it was, like, the people from the north are boring and the people from the south are lazy.
Oh.
That's what
I heard. I was going to say, people from the south, we just have more spice, more flavor.
I mean, that's also true. About what I searched, like, most of the cuisine is more, like, on the south, on the north. Not too much. Still the same, but there's more, like, on the south. So, there's, like, the difference.
Yeah,
and it's interesting.
No, it really is, because you have the Alps at the north of Italy,
yeah,
right? And so, you know, if you're dealing with particularly Milan region, then that kind of folds into, there's that transalpine tradition between France and Germany. And then when you push over a little more eastward to Venice, right, they don't have the Roman tradition of the past. They distinctively mark their founding as, you know, outside of the Roman Empire. If you ever do get a chance to go to Italy, that is a perfectly preserved little medieval Renaissance town.
So cool. I love, there's one in France too where it's like perfectly preserved, like the walled cities and everything. It's so cool.
It's just such a little like little historical archive.
It's because so, it survived is amazing to me.
It's a historical preservation space. Venice is over here, and they're Venice as a maritime economy in the Renaissance was very much in north-south, but also east-west, so they had a lot more trade with Ottoman Empire. Mm-hmm. And so, mm-hmm. so they get a lot more of that influence, whereas as you move more southern, you're going to get...
You get the Florida.
Well, you get the Florida south, but no, you also get, because it's solidly in the Mediterranean, mm-hmm. so once you start pushing into Sicily, Sardinia, Naples, that's when you're going to get periods where they were under Spanish control, periods when they were under I think it was part of the Umayyad Caliphate, but the Islamic world, right? So we have, you know, different, you know, just so many varieties of culture layered up in different places, and that's where even the
have
cuisine
you been
is so different. Oh yeah, of course.
Oh man,
sorry.
No.
Sorry, of course. But you know, I'm an art historian. You don't get through an art history degree without having to take the grand tour.
I'm sure that was amazing seeing it. What was your favorite part of Italy?
I went to some parts too young to really appreciate them, mm-hmm. because you know when you're 17, you're more worried about that fight with your friend over that boy, But Venice, yeah, it's really interesting. You know, it's entirely a pedestrian city, so that's, you know, a thing you
yeah.
kind of always
that's
have to
the most
about,
beautiful
but, yeah.
part of Europe mm-hmm. to me is just walking through those historic cities.
But it is also, you know, it is a pedestrian city. It is cobblestones. It's a lot of stairs. It's a lot of bridges.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't know how they maintain any rules of accessibility, but
yeah.
they still exist. So, yeah. And no, absolutely. It's a beautiful space. And then again, all of those spaces that you're going to walk into, decorated churches, but also old historic homes. And Venice does have, to go back to modern art, they do have that biannual contemporary art exhibition the Venice nice. Biennale every 2 years. And I know it was just this past summer, so it'll be again in another 2 years.
Well, that's a good recommendation, mm-hmm. Camille. You usually do the things to do in our country, so if anyone's listening and they end up going to Italy in the next 2 years, mm-hmm. there's something for you to do.
There's a lot of things to do in Italy. There's definitely a lot.
Well, thank you so much. Of course. And if anyone was just tuning in, this is HCC art history professor Valerie Palazzolo. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank
you.
And
it was so much fun. We really appreciate you coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And of course, we're going to go ahead and cut to a music break. Camilla, you want to introduce your song?
So, from Eurovision, and of course, Italy, we have Måneskin with a Driver.
All right, we hope you enjoy.
Hot like summer, give me eyes, don't twist the knife. Put me under your spell, then hide the crime. Bathe your soul till it's naked, bite my lip till you break it. Steal my heart, get it wasted, don't do it slow. If you're gonna set fire to the night, baby, let me be the lighter. If you're already high and you wanna fly, I'll be the hit that takes you higher. If you wanna love when you touch the sky, you can be my midnight rider. If there's nowhere to go and you wanna go wild, I wanna be your driver. Tie me down in your robe, made of velvet and turn the light down low. Bathe your soul till it's naked, bite my lip till you break it. Steal my heart, get it wasted, done to it slow. If you're gonna set fire to the night, baby, let me be the light. Set a fire to the night, baby, let me be the lighter. If you're already high and you wanna fly, I'll be the hit that takes you higher. If you wanna love when you touch the sky, you can be my midnight rider. If there's nowhere to go when you wanna go wild, I wanna be the driver.
All right, you're listening to Jet Set on Hawk Radio, the official radio station of Hillsborough Community College, live from Ybor City.
So true.
And we are here, and we are back, and we are talking about Italy.
Still.
And Annie, are you going to tell us more history?
I
Even
am.
Even more history.
Yes.
I am. Now, I won't lie. All this information is from Britannica. Yeah.
It's a good resource.
Yeah, because I was very lazy, didn't do anything till 1 a.m. this morning.
It's given Southern Italy.
It seems to be the general consensus is we all got busy.
It's November. I mean,
it's November. Yeah. And last week was my birthday, so I was doing that. And then I was planning stuff for my cruise.
I think
this
that's
weekend,
a good excuse.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. I was busy, and then I was at work. So.
So what history are you talking about in
Italy?
Well,
we're just gonna kind of go over a brief, very brief of how I don't know how to say it, like, just like early history and stuff like that.
Okay. Starting with like actual Italian or like Roman or.
It kind of like talks. I kind of talk about all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So across a span of more than 3,000 years, Italian history has been marked by episodes of temporary unification and long separation of intercommunal strife and failed empires.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And the French had their hands in that pot.
And it's been at peace for more than half a century now. Italian inhabitants enjoy a high standard of living in a highly developed culture.
Half a century. I wonder what happened half a century ago. I wonder what happened.
Yeah.
Oopsies.
Through its archaeological record stretches back tens of thousands of years, Italian history begins with the, I'm probably going to say this wrong, Etruscans? No.
What
is it?
Etruscans?
Yes.
The Etruscans. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, I knew
the
I was saying that
guys before
right.
The Romans.
I heard straitjackets.
Yes. An ancient civilization that rose between the Arno and Tiber rivers. The
Tiber, right?
Is it Tiber?
Tiber.
Tiber, okay, thank you. The, I'm saying it wrong again.
It's a funky language.
Yeah. The original people, I'm just going to say that because I cannot pronounce that.
Etruscan.
Etruscans? Yeah, I'm still going to pronounce that.
No, you get it right.
Were supplanted.
Etruscans.
There you go.
Yeah, I can't say it.
Shout out to the
Camilo says it fancy.
Yeah. They were supplanted in the 3rd century BCE by the Romans, who soon became the chief power in the Mediterranean world and whose empire stretched from India to Scotland by the 2nd century CE.
Nice.
The empire, but ow.
That
empire.
That was scripted.
Oh yeah, totally. The empire was rarely secure, not only because of the unwillingness of conquered peoples to stay conquered, but also because of power struggles between competing Roman political factions, military leaders, families, ethnic groups, and religions.
There were many, many, many civil wars.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like when I took my Roman history class,
they had a nice, happy
like
history.
Every other day, there was a civil war in Rome.
Or nothing went wrong.
Yeah. The Roman Empire fell in the 5th century CE after a succession of barbarian invasions through which Huns...
Debatable.
This, okay.
Debatable. This
I'm
is the
going
one, this
off
is,
Britannica.
The famous debate is when did the Roman Empire actually fall? Because you could say it ended in the 5th century when it collapsed. It split, really. Mm-hmm. The western half fell to the Goths. But then you have the eastern half continue to live on as to what we know as the Byzantine Empire. But they called themselves Romans, if I'm correct. They called themselves Romans, and they did not fall until the 1400s. So really, if you think about it, did Rome last in the east all the way up until the late Middle Ages, or did it collapse in the 500s? And it's kind of hard to tell because, on one hand, like the city of Rome is no longer in Rome itself. So it's like, how do you really reconcile that? But also...
Where is Rome?
Rome was in Italy.
Yeah, but like
the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire split because they had conquered the whole Mediterranean by the end of the empire.
Uh-huh.
But the eastern half with like Greece and stuff and Constantinople, that stayed intact while the western half fell to poor management and the Goths came into the peninsula and they took over for a bit. Various many Goths, Visigoths, other Goths. None of them were looking like me. They look like
none of them were goth like Tim.
Anyway, where was I? Through which the Huns members, Ostrogoths and Franks, most previously known as subjects of Rome, seized portions of Italy and ruled to the level of city-state, although the Normans succeeded in establishing a modest empire in southern Italy and Sicily in the 11th century.
The Normans got around.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Took over England.
They took over Ireland. Well, not entirely. They raided Ireland.
Oh.
That was a big part of...
Vikings were raiding everywhere, dude.
Yeah. That was like 8th, 9th century Ireland, though.
That was the Viking era.
I think Ireland had a peaceful and happy history. But we're done with that. Ireland.
Megan, you just want to talk about Ireland every time.
Yeah.
Many of these city-states flourished during the Renaissance era, which we talked about earlier. It's a time marked by significant intellect, artistic, and technological advances, but also savage warfare between states loyal to the Pope and those loyal to the Holy Roman Empire.
True. The city-states were also warring. They were warring all the time. I took that course that wrote Italian history.
Everybody's warring all the time.
Mm-hmm. When the very fascinating period in Italian history in the northern part is when they switched over from rule from feudal lords into republics, and then from republics into little, not dictatorships, but there's a word for it, but like tyrants, city tyrants, and how that kind of, how like that shift from those three different types of government is very interesting, and how there's so much strife within the cities between warring factions and political divide and stuff like that. Because they had political parties back then too.
That doesn't really surprise me though.
No, it doesn't, but you know, it was much more violent back then. More knives involved in politics back then.
The Italian unification came in the 19th century, according to Britannica, when a liberal revolution installed Victor Emmanuel II as king. In World War I, Italy fought on the side of the Allies, but under the rule of the fascist leader Benito
Mussolini. He is World War II. That's my favorite part of history, is World War II, just studying how each country did that. So,
no, World War I, they were still under the king, I believe. But that's that's funny, because in World War I, they were, before World War I, they were technically allied with Germany and Austria-Hungary. But when war actually broke out, they said, dang, sorry, you deal with that. That ain't my problem.
Italy has not had any good luck when it comes to wars, ever.
But then they joined in the Allies, and that is the most fascinating part of World War I to me, because they were fighting in the Alps. And so there are some incredible photos of like actual fighting on the top of mountains with artillery machines and machine guns and rifles just on the tops of peaks of mountains.
To bring all that up, a mountain.
Photos of them using like pulley systems to pull up artillery cannons, and they would dig tunnels. They would dig trenches
that
and tunnels to the mountaintops. I think they blew up entire peaks of mountains, which is just crazy. But
they really hated those mountains.
A huge chunk. So they were firing at each other, really. Mm-hmm. So it was the most intense warfare in the whole global conflict, to me at least.
All right.
Anyway, as I'd like to go on, I've run out of time. There's a lot of history here. It's already 9:40.
Oh, true.
Can you sum up the rest of Italian history in one word?
Cool. No.
I would say mata.
So. Thank you, Annie.
Thank you, Annie. Sorry, I tried to process that in my brain. Well, we're going to go to another quick music break. Annie, you want to introduce your song?
This is A Million Hearts by Katrina Stewart. And if you've watched Sam and Colby, you know who this is, because she was Sam's ex-girlfriend.
It's all about you, babe. Yeah, I didn't
Welcome back. You're listening to Jet Set on Hawk Radio, the official radio station of Hillsborough Community College. We are back. We are talking about Italy. And Tim, we're talking about the best movies of all time.
These are, in fact, the best movies of all time. So I do horror whenever I like to do and whenever I can. And since we're in Italy, physically, we are in Italy right now. Definitely.
That's true. It's really beautiful here.
You can't, the Italian influence on the horror genre can't be underestimated. The giallo genre of horror is very important, which kind of took rise in the 60s. They were a bunch of very low-budget films, exploitation films, but they were mostly crime thrillers with very gory kills, which is how they got famous, because this is kind of the era of the video nasty. That'll be more of the 80s, but it's kind of the beginning of that. And so it took its namesake, giallo. It just means yellow in Italian, because in the 1920s and 30s, there was a very famous genre of pulp novel that had for crime fiction, and they all had yellow covers because of the publisher just published them with the yellow colors, and so they've got known as giallo. And then once they adapted them into movies, they as well adopted the name giallo, just kind of stuck with them. And I got that all from, IMDb. So, anyways, two giallo films I have, just quick recommendations. You can't talk about this genre without talking about Suspiria by Dario Argento, who's probably the most famous Italian horror director. Some people scoff their nose at calling Suspiria giallo because it's more supernatural, and giallo, again, is mostly crime thriller. But it's definitely adjacent of the genre. And also, the score is by a band called Goblin, which is really funny to me. It's just called Goblin, and it's a really great soundtrack. But Suspiria is a film about a ballet school in Germany that is controlled by a witch. It is one of the most gorgeous films you'll see. Every single scene in that film is lit, and the stage is set with the most vibrant colors. Literally every room, every single frame in that movie, it takes so much time. And I love it. And the other quick one is Pieces, 1982, which has this tagline of, it's exactly what you think it's about. Because the poster is just a chainsaw with a half cut off leg on it. And it's exactly what you think it is. It's a film set in Boston, but Boston, for some reason, everyone sounds Italian. And it's about a guy with a chainsaw killing college students. And at one point, there is for a Bruce Lee imitator comes on to do kung fu because... Just because.
That's amazing.
So those are my quick recommendations. Camilo, why don't we go on to you and tell us, what is your recommendation for if I was in Italy, what should I do?
Okay, hi. First of all, benvenuto, grazie per ascoltare la nostra radio.
Hello. Zoom tight.
What? Well, I need to be bilingual, like, just randomly. Well, I'm actually being bilingual right now, so. Well, as I said before, Italy might be a small country like south of Florida, we said that, but there's a lot of things to do, like a lot. From top to bottom, there are many cities, many things. So I'm just gonna stick to the basics, saying it like that. Fair enough. And about what I research, TripAdvisor and Condé Nast Traveler, I always look at those magazines. So, it doesn't matter, like, what are your preferences. Like, I think in Italy, there's always, like, something for you, depending on your tastes. Why say it? Because, for example, you have Milan, which is the capital of fashion, for something like that. And you have Florence, which is the capital of the arts. And Rome, I would call it, like, well, they call it, like, the city of eternity, for something like that. So, I would say, like, more history, more architecture, things like that. So there's a lot of things. So if you go to Milan, that's an example, stop by to the Galleria dell'Accademia, which is, it's a shopping center. It's just a shopping center, but if you look at the pictures, it's, I would say like this, how it was. I forgot the name. No, the Galleria dell'Accademia was in Florence. I'm talking about Galleria Vittorio Emanuele Secondo, which is a 19th century glass top barbed vaulted tunnel. This is something weird to say like that, but it's just like a whole roof made of glass.
Wow.
So it's so magical. Some people say that it looks like out from a Barbie movie. I don't know which one exactly, but yes. And I look at that. So there's one place specifically inside that shopping mall, which is called the World of Leonardo da Vinci. That is like a little exhibition of artifacts of Leonardo there in Milan. And maybe some people would say that Milan is the most boring city in Italy, but like about what is I don't agree, because you're in a city with like more than 1500 years of history, with literally architectural designs like in every corner and galleries everywhere. So there's a lot to see there.
I imagine that being boring.
No, yeah, it doesn't
sound boring.
There's people more country cities that are that
where's
are pretty
Six
boring.
Flags.
Yeah.
Where's the Starbucks? No, come on. No. Don't go to Starbucks if you're in LA. Go to local places. That's a fact. That's why there is no Domino's there. If you're like more into archaeological things, stop by. This is close to Naples, which will be the Pompeii Archaeological Park. You know, the Mount Vesuvius, that volcano that just...
Rest in peace.
Yeah, rest in peace. But I don't know. I just feel like I just find it attractive to just walk in ancient ruins next to a volcano.
You know, I think it's funny. Mount Vesuvius is still active, I believe, and which it erupted like I think 100 years ago or something. And I think it's crazy. That it's like she's
the
still
idea
going.
Of volcano, because I've never seen a volcano in person. That kind of scares me a little.
I
don't
want to live next to that.
No.
That's
yeah.
Happens. I've seen those ash covered bodies. I don't want to end up like that.
And well, as they mentioned before, in Florence was the first Academy of Arts, which is Galleria dell'Accademia. That's what I said first, but I'm mistaken. Inside there, you can see the famous sculpture of David, and a lot of mostly like sculptures and artwork by Michelangelo, and more like 16th, 15th century paintings. That like in Florence, there are, beside that, of course, there are more museums to watch at. But it's always to start by like the principal, something like that. And I still have some time.
Yeah.
So I found some interesting facts about like the most popular tourist attractions there in specifically Rome. So the Fontana di Trevi, if you know what I'm talking about, that famous fountain that is. I mean, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so I just wanted to make sure. So it's a fountain. Yeah, it's a fountain. But why is a fountain so special?
It can be pretty.
It is pretty.
It can make a wish.
Yeah.
There's the legend of the wish. Like, if you throw a coin, it needs to go, like, up to your left shoulder. If you throw it once, you go back to Rome. If you throw a second coin, you will find love in Italy. And if you throw a third coin, you will be married soon.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That's the myth of the coins in there.
I know people just toss like pennies in shopping malls. That's all I've seen.
Yeah. Freddy Krueger shows up in a well in Nightmare on Elm Street 4.
I went to the going to go to,
or
to the
a fountain. Excuse me.
So I found out that the history of this fountain was that Thomas had this costume of building always fountains like at the end of an aqueducts. And I think that it's important to say that Romans and aqueducts are like
butter and jelly.
They're butter and jelly. They're experts in that.
They're really good at moving water.
Uh-huh, exactly. And it was the Pope Clement VII who decided to make just a pretty fountain like in that aqueduct because. And he made a contest with some architects to say like, okay, who's going to make the design for this? So he made it. And almost the architecture for that fountain is going to be like a far cousin from Galileo Galilei. Alessandro Galilei, that was interesting. But then they say like, nah, let's just do another man. And it was by Nicola Salvi. But the fountain took 30 years to be built. So it basically was built by three different architects through all that time. One at the beginning, one at the middle, then one at the end. And there it is. Fontana di Trevi.
Well, this has been a fun show.
We didn't even mention Italian food.
Oh, yeah.
Go eat gelato. Go eat pizza. Go eat pasta.
Bruschetta
pizza.
Go eat pasta.
Go eat bruschetta.
Bruschetta spaghetti.
Bruschetta. Go eat tiramisu. Is that's Italian, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Go eat.
How was it called? I made this.
I forgot that Italian soda, which isn't even Italian and also is not different than regular soda.
That thing with queso, wait, with ricotta cheese, I forgot how it was called. Cannoli. All right, yeah.
Right. Ah, yes, cannoli.
Thank you guys for joining us on Jet Set live from Ybor City on Hawk Radio, the official radio station of Hillsborough Community College. This is our episode on Italy.
See you in another show next week.
See you guys next week.
And thank you.
Just another dusty record on the shelf. Would you blow me off and play me like everybody else? If I asked you to scratch my back, could you manage that? Like if we had chicken travy, I can handle that. Furthermore, I apologize for any skipping tracks. This is the last girl that played me, left a couple cracks. I used to, now I'm over that. Cause holding grudges over love is ancient artifacts. If I could only find a note to make you understand, I'd sing it softly in your ear and grab you by the hand. Just keep me stuck inside your head like your favorite tune. And know my heart's a stereo, the only place for you.
My heart's a stereo, it beats for you, so listen close. Hear my thoughts in every note.
Yeah, come on.
Make me your radio, and turn me up
was an old school 50-pound boombox. Would you hold me on your shoulder wherever you walk? Would you turn my volume up in front of the cops and crank it higher every time?
Good morning and welcome to your favorite variety news show, giving you the latest in our opinion, the greatest news for your eardrums. I'm one of your co-hosts, Vince Vibes, giving you the daily rap.
Oh, I'm Anthony with Showbiz Spotlight.
Dustin with Drama Digest, still ditty free.
Steel with Football Focus.
And we got a really special episode today. We got a special guest in the studio today, an owner of one of our regular spots that we go to every Tuesday and Thursday, just about. But we'll tell you more about that and later. What do you got going on today, Dustin?